Well, as we come now towards the end of Matthew's Gospel, these details of Jesus' death and resurrection, they are familiar to us and to many. But our danger, as ever, maybe, is over familiarity. We somewhat glaze over, maybe even stop listening. We miss the significance of what Matthew is noting for us. We avoid the challenge they present and uncomfortable questions they raise. But the main reason we want to keep paying attention, of course, is because we'll also get to see Jesus, what he has done in a fresher and deeper way. So let's turn to our next instalment from Matthew 27. Now Jesus stood before Pilate the governor, and the governor asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus said, "You have said so." But when he was accused by the chief priests and elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate said to him, "Do you not hear how many things they testify against you?" But he gave him no answer, not even to a single charge, so that the governor was greatly amazed. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the crowd any one prisoner whom they wanted. And they had then a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when they had gathered, Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want me to release for you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ?" For he knew that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. Besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in a dream." Now the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor again said to them, "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with the Jesus who is called Christ?" They all said, "Let him be crucified." And he said, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Let him be crucified." So when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather that a riot was beginning, he took water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to it yourselves." And all the people answered, "His blood be on us and on our children." Then he released for them Barabbas, and having scourged Jesus, delivered him to be crucified. Well, remember last week that having delivered their verdict on Jesus, the chief priests and the elders handed him over to Pilate, the governor, the Roman governor, wanting Pilate, of course, to issue the death sentence on Jesus. But then remember, Matthew switched the focus to Judas. Do you remember Judas by now had realized the weight of what he had done? He went back to his religious leaders, those co-conspirators, said to them, "I have sinned by betraying innocent blood." But of course, they didn't care. Do you remember how they responded? "What is that to us? See to it yourself." Which Judas did, didn't he? By hanging himself. But still, his guilt remained. Well, now we are back this morning with Jesus and Pilate. And as we consider this familiar encounter, four questions to ponder. The first, who is standing here? Now, when we meet someone or we're presented with someone, we do, don't we, take a moment just to take stock. We make a decision about who's before us, who they are, but also then how they fit in, what our response to them should be. Well, here Jesus is brought before Pilate, and he asks the question, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Now, it's not actually recorded for us, is it, Pilate's tone of voice or the look on his face as he asked this question. But do remember that before Pilate stands this man in chains who was bound. Do you remember he's been roughed up and beaten and he has no supporters at all. So he certainly doesn't look like a king, at least of any kind that Pilate need worry about. And again, our world, it looks on a pitiful figure, maybe like this, pays no attention at all. So why did Pilate then even ask the question? Because, of course, that was the accusation of the religious leaders. They needed this charge that would stick against Jesus, that would lead to the death penalty and treason, would certainly fit into that category. But did Jesus really pose a threat to the mighty Roman Empire in that way? Well, Pilate asks the question, are you the king of the Jews? To which Jesus speaks to say, you have said so. Now, it's enigmatic, but you might remember we've thought about this before, because it's what he said on trial before Caiaphas as the high priest as well. It's a way of affirming that, yes, what Pilate says is true. He is the king of the Jews. But it's almost highlighting, but what do you mean by that? Because Jesus certainly wasn't the kind of king in the way that Pilate had in mind. Why is Matthew getting us to think about this again? Well, he's still asking us, isn't he? Have you realized who is standing here? And we're beginning to realize that who Jesus is not despite how he appears, but actually precisely because of the state he is in. I'll read what Isaiah said to us again about God's servant. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, no beauty that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men. And there's Jesus. So here is God's king. What kind of king is this? Well, we read on and we see more of Jesus' true kingship in what happens next. Verse 12. But when he was accused by the chief priests and elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate said to him, do you not hear how many things they testify against you? But he gave them no answer. In the face of his accusers, Jesus said not a word. Why not? Well, of course, he didn't need to. But also Isaiah had said, he was oppressed, he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Then, end of verse 14, we're told, the governor was greatly amazed. It seems Pilate can tell this man is no threat. Pilate may even be impressed by him. And yet Pilate's amazement is yet more evidence that Jesus is the king of the Jews. We could look back to Isaiah again, who'd foretold that Gentile rulers would be amazed by God's servant. So who is standing here? It is the promised king of the Jews. Well, which then leads to the question, well, who would you want? Let's read on verse 15. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the crowd any one prisoner whom they wanted. And they had then a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when they had gathered, Pilate said to them, whom do you want me to release for you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ? Now that name, Barabbas, is literally son of the Father. And of course, Matthew has shown us Jesus is the son of the Father. So Matthew, like in fact all the gospel writers, is inviting us to consider Jesus and Barabbas side by side. Even though, of course, they're very different, even opposites, Barabbas was an insurrectionist. That is, he was guilty of leading an uprising against the authorities, against Rome, when Jesus was nothing of the kind. But they were both in custody, and it was traditional of this Passover feast for one to be released. So Pilate asked the people which one they wanted. Did they want the popular nationalist freedom-fighting hero or the lonely, beaten nobody? Again, we the reader are being asked a similar question. If we wanted a king, what kind would we choose? What kind of king do we think can deliver what we really need? Well, now we've already seen that the religious leaders clearly don't care for truth or for justice, and Pilate knows that. Look down to verse 18. Pilate knew that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. And again, it's a provoking thought for us today. Still today, people want for themselves to be honoured. They want the honour and the following that Jesus might take away. And so they reject Jesus out of envy. That's what's happening here. And Pilate knew that. And that's not all he knew, verse 19. Besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him. have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in a dream." Now, dreams in Matthew are from God. Can you remember the ones we've had already? We looked at them a long time ago at St. Benet's. They come at the beginning of the Gospel. Do you remember Joseph? He acted on the basis of dreams from God, as did the Magi. And this dream here implies, well, what Pilate already knew, that Jesus was a righteous man, but then more than that, that mistreating Jesus would have consequences. Now, Pilate's wife may not have realised that she was using Old Testament language here, because the Book of Lamentations, for one, makes it plain that God will hold accountable any who shed righteous blood. So it's obvious now what Pilate, sitting on that judgment seat, should do. He should dismiss this charge immediately. Instead, verse 21, the governor again said to them, "Which of the two do you want me to release for you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with the Jesus who is called Christ?" They all said, "Let him be crucified." So here we are, the religious leaders, and with them all the people, have made their choice. Yes, to a mobster like Barabbas. No, to one like Jesus. It is stunning as we read it. We're meant to feel it. Here is God's King, who's come in fulfillment of God's promises, and God's own people demand that he would be crucified. And notice Pilate has now backed himself into a corner. He knows the truth. He even asks, doesn't he, verse 23, why? What evil has he done? But it's too late for such concerns. They shouted all the more, "Let him be crucified." And so then, verse 24, when Pilate saw that he was gaining nothing, but rather that a riot was beginning, notice what drives Pilate's decision in the end. For him as well, it's not truth or justice, but rather, what was he gaining? As far as Pilate could see, from this beaten man before him, there was nothing for him to gain. And so he was expendable. But what a mistake to think Jesus has nothing to offer, to reject him. A mistake that has been made countless times down the centuries to today. The world doesn't want this Jesus. Next question, who takes responsibility? So Pilate's wife has had that dream. She's urged her husband to consider the outcome of his actions, because shedding righteous blood is serious. And so Pilate, well, he does want to absolve himself of that responsibility. So verse 24, Pilate took water, washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood." Well, Pilate doesn't get to say whether he is innocent or not. The point is not whether Pilate, the governor, thinks he's innocent, but what does God think? Because we've seen, haven't we, Pilate knows that Jesus is the innocent one. Pilate knows the reason his accusers have brought him is because of envy. Pilate has been warned by his wife what to do. He can't simply pass the buck. And again, Matthew is teaching us, people, we will be held responsible for our response to Jesus. We cannot simply wash our hands and make excuses. Notice how Pilate then goes on to say, end of verse 24, "See to it yourselves." Remember, that rings a bell, doesn't it? That's what the religious leaders said to Judas last time. And now Pilate is saying the same words to the people. It's chilling how they respond. Verse 25. And all the people answered, "His blood be on us and on our children." Well, they seem to take responsibility, but they just don't know what they are saying. But actually, what they are saying is true, because there is a God and he will hold people accountable. And in fact, Jesus has explained that this will now be the end of Israel, of Jerusalem. Those who reject God's kingdom will be judged by God. So what they say here is true. They will be held responsible. And within a few years, indeed, Jerusalem was destroyed, as predicted by Jesus. So it's a somber moment in this trial. We've seen the religious leaders, the Jews, we've seen the Gentile rulers and people, we've seen everyone rejecting Jesus and the seriousness of that. And yet there is hope. One final question. What is the outcome? And that takes us to verse 26. Then Pilate released for them Barabbas, and having scourged Jesus, delivered him to be crucified. Well, this verse is, if you like, a matter-of-fact summary of the outcome of this trial before Pilate. But of course, Matthew is written in such a way that he hopes that we now see the significance of this. Here is a picture of what Jesus is achieving by his death. We've met Barabbas, who was on the fast track for execution, for rebelling against authority. Likely that the cross had been prepared for him. And yet now he, the guilty one, goes free. But instead, the innocent one suffers and dies, quite possibly taking Barabbas' place on the very cross which had been prepared for Barabbas. We read this and think, is it a miscarriage of justice? Well, in a sense, yes, of course, that's obvious. But we are now meant to think it's so much more than that. This is the fulfillment of God's plan. It's even good news, gospel. Here is God's King, who did not come to be served, but to serve, and gave his life as a ransom for many. Did you notice how in these verses, Matthew overdid it somewhat by calling Pilate a governor or a ruler many times, seven times? And yet by this point, we've realized he was powerless, really, to do what was right. He evaded responsibility, only concerned for himself and his own position. That's not true leadership. And anyway, there's something of Pilate in all of us, isn't there? That we want to rule in the sense of running our life our way. We look out for our own interests, not those of others. Maybe we too, like Pilate, are drawn to Jesus to some extent, but are tempted to pull back when we see the cost of commitment. And what a contrast that is with the true King in this passage. One who seems so weak, so powerless, so alone. And yet this is a true King. A King who steps forward, who takes responsibility for his people, even for their sin. That he gives of himself, well, he even gives himself, even to suffering and death, the eternal good of others. Surely this is the King that we would choose. I'll lead us in a prayer. Our Father, we do indeed praise you for the King you have given to us. Thank you that Jesus fulfilled all your promises, that he is just the kind of King that we so urgently need. Thank you that Jesus, the innocent one, died, that we, the guilty, might go free to enjoy life with you forever. Amen.